Well, Michael and I would like to welcome you back to another recording of the Saturn Earth Connection. Our website is helloearth.info, and today is Tuesday, August 24th, 2010, and this is hour 144 with Michael from Maui, Hawaii. Michael was taken to a huge luminescent sphere near Saturn as a student visitor and returned to Maui with their flowing dialogue. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Curtis. And welcome back, everyone, and see if we have more information that is being streamed through to us that we should not be taken unawares. That's a biblical quote, you know, that there is a certain assurance to those who remain attuned to the celestials, that they would not be taken unawares when certain dramatic events, whether they be global, natural, or geologic, or even celestial, that could happen, solar, cosmic, or extra planetary activity that could cause various kinds of problems, as well as social, political. These things are all part of a composite toward the end time scenario. In time scenario, I mean that there's a certain deadline time. Elevation of humanity will go to a certain point and then reach a point for essentially like a graduation, move on to another developmental level. Anyway, Curtis, that's a little bit that just streamed in just now. I didn't know I was going to say that.
Well, that's great. I'm glad they're paying attention.
Yeah.
Well, Kathleen writes, the day after our recording last time about her pressure, she says, "Hi, Curtis and Michael, what a wonderful show. I have such a better understanding now about this pressure. How ironic that I've been blocking the very thing that I've been praying for. I remember when I started feeling this shower of energy last summer and wondering what kind of energy it was. And then you spoke about it, Michael, in one of your shows, and I was so delighted that I was feeling the energy circuit of the Holy Spirit. I even remarked to myself not too long ago that I hadn't felt that flow in a while. So now you've enlightened me again. Thank you both so much, and also to the celestials who must be shaking their heads at me in bewilderment. I know I am shaking my head at myself this time. Love and joy, signed Kathleen."
Well, Kathleen, that's a nice statement, revelation, and moving on into more experiential, developmental, relational and experiential work with the divine source and center, first source, through his guiding properties, energies. And of course, the Holy Spirit circuit is very important, which never really talks or announces his presence. It sort of pushes you toward what is to be known, the real personality circuit of. There was only one truly, really wonderful personality circuit that actually gave organization to chaos. And that is the Creator-Son circuit. Creator-Son's ability to find communicate, whether it be to a particle, simple non-existent vibratory energy that becomes something. And many of the physicists today are, you know, moving towards string theory, which is vibratory and has a lot to do with how even the structure of the universe, what makes this universe seem to be real in our domain right now, was literally spoken into existence, but by a very high-level word or communique. And the Holy Spirit circuit is a kind of a communique which points us and gives us back to one of the most wonderful gifts that we have, is to be able to be bestowed given the actual Creator Son as one of his creatures of the most base or dense origin, which is mortal and human. And in that way, we have a much easier way of relating to the first source through that personality circuit back to the Father, first source, and essentially in circuitizing within ourselves, within our personality, three the triunity of the Godhead within ourselves. So we become triune. I've often said that we become trinitized beings or triune beings. Anyway, that's one of the things I might want to add to that revelatory point, because you will find that as you submit, and as we submit ourselves to the guidance of this pressure circuit, we will find discoveries of greater interest. And sometimes, I often remind myself that I'm sort of like one of my pet cats, that sometimes I throw a piece of food at him and he doesn't see it go by him, and he kind of doesn't know. He's got a little snack close by, and I kind of pressure him. There it is. And then he finally discovers it and goes, whoa! And that's how sometimes I feel when I discover a new dimensional area of involvement in this reality that we live in, which is much greater than what is often often spoken of as being just simply a static place. It's much more dynamic than that. Where we live is really a grand launching pad toward a tremendous future. Mm. Anyway, that's a little bit there for Kathleen. And Curtis, how is everything else?
A grand launching pad, huh?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well,
now we're still using rocketry to get out in space.
Mm-hmm. And we have the other technology.
Hidden.
Oh, it's not that hidden. It's on the internet.
Oh, okay.
It's, look for Otis T. Carr.
Uh-huh.
C-A-R-R, Otis T. Carr. He worked with Tesla, and he was in one of my Tesla books called Return of the Dove. But I never found anything about Otis T. Carr. For all those years I looked, I never found anything. And one day I thought, hey, now I have the internet. Now I'll look on the internet. And there's some audio files on him and his spacecraft, which has two gyros in it, one going one way, one going in a 90-degree angle. And you can imagine what that does. But Kathleen continues with another email of a couple days ago. Hi, Curtis and Michael. Forgive my grasping at words, but I feel a need to express this experience I had last week. I woke up in the middle of Thursday night experiencing strong thought pressure. So I took your advice, Michael, and did not fight it, but after saying the Lord's Prayer, I relaxed into it and accepted it. It then started coming in waves, building in strength, then subsiding. It kind of reminded me of the ebbing and flowing contractions of labor. After each wave, I experienced a plateau. At each plateau, I felt as if each cell in my body was resonating with my divine fractal. After the final and most intense wave, I felt a calm, deep joy within a living peacefulness. And then I felt embraced by the celestial family of God through an energetic connection. I am almost without words to describe the profound nature of this experience. I still marvel at the memory of it. If I think about the resonance of my divine fractal that I experienced, I can still experience it in the same as I did that night. However, when I think about that final plateau, it is more elusive and I don't experience the same intensity that I felt on Thursday night. I'm working on this new resonance with my divine fractal. When I thought about writing and sending this out to Michael, I felt resonance. When I thought about not sending it, I felt the discord. This is certainly new territory for me, and I'm grateful beyond words for your help, Michael, in navigating me inwards, for your help, Curtis, in giving Michael this platform, and for the Celestials, for the unending loving devotion they shower us with lastly to the source of all this outpouring, our loving Father who watches over us. We are blessed beyond measure. Love and joy, signed Kathleen.
Well, fantastic, Kathleen, and you are indeed moving on. And there's just so much more ahead of you as you progress and literally fall in love with God. And it is a kind of relationship that transcends anything that can be built naturally here, even with, you know, any personality here on earth, a human being, because it expands beyond the norm of our dimension, of what we are, our emotions, even goes into areas that are not human, but are more divine. And this is the true experience that you will begin to participate, as it was, you know, by biblical writings, and he says, participate. We participate in the divine nature, and this is exactly what is happening to you. That nature, which is from first source, the divine fractal is from divinity, you know, from first source, or a representative of the actual father fragment, gives you a divine dimension to yourself. And you literally expand and grow and become a divine being. And never forget that the Son, or the Creator Son, has that personality dimension that can help you align to the whole experience more easily. But never place any of them within the limits of our being. Now, this is where the frustration of the Celestials came in, and sometimes a great disapproval was given when, in teaching, I guess, the Earthlings some of the divine ways, the people ended up creating idols. You know, trying to compact or to put the divine way into earthly vessel or earthly context or human context or context skill or ability or a concept, all of those things have to be thrown on. That's why you have reached a plateau. You reach that plateau, it is a new area, and that area is to be discovered and enriched. In other words, it is a part of your experience that is unwritten. Now, the dimension of godliness or the dimension of the divine nature begins to grow, and you become more and more a divine child, really the child of God. And this is how our growth works here in the body, on Earth, the grand launching pad, as I said earlier, for a great celestial career that just will not end if we choose to make that launch. If we want to stay as a mortal of our realm and base and as an animal, we tend to only have the destiny of an animal. But if we move on past that, we will have a much, much greater call. The animal legacy will leave us, of course, because it's connected a lot to our physical characteristics. The tiredness and all of that stuff that can come out with the physical body, as well as its over excitement, youthful strength, and all of these things will diminish. But hopefully, as that framework or what it really is, scaffolding that was supposed to hold together the greater dimension which is being built of the divine nature, when the scaffolding of the mortal creation falls away, the Marancho develops, where we can both embrace the physical being and the divine and spiritual being in a higher realm. We will just be able to continue to progress on ever higher ways, ever more fully. So anyway, that's a little bit of the philosophy of what's going on.
The big picture, right?
Yeah, and then the more direct picture is your actual personality, circuit, your actual experience, actual situational things, relational things. And all of that adds to the fullness and embodiment. And gaining celestial talent, in other words, being able to be a citizen of the universe, that's all part of it too. But it will require really knowing all kinds of rights and privileges and laws and dictates, because it's a living and alive way of being.
Well, we certainly feel alive.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, that's good. So, speaking of being alive, are we going to feel alive when after we leave here and we're in a Marancho body?
I mean, lively, like running around. Actually, you'll be quite heightened above that.
Oh.
So, the physical weaknesses that tend to be part of the universe that we live in, not just the universe in its more primal density, but one more of a lighter nature, more spirit, that tends to be one in which releases a whole lot of the weight. Actually, the scaffolding of life, physical life, is quite heavy. But as it falls away, underlying it is that which is the true gem. Yeah. and it's quite lively.
The true gem of life.
Yeah. This never runs out. And that energy that keeps flowing, you know, and renewing us, even if our bodies can get old, that energy just continues on, if we know how to tap into it. And we start learning how, just like Kathleen is learning how. Everyone needs to first realize that is there. It's always flowing. So some people just not aware. Because it's not aware, they're not focused on it. It doesn't enliven their real being, you know.
Well, we have a question from Paul J.S. He writes, "Hello, gentlemen. I have a quick question about Nibbandhan. Attaches a passage from the Urantia book I was reading with the question when the question arose. Does Nibbandhan equate out to be the Milky Way, or is it greater than that?"
The question, Nibbandhan.
Nibbandhan, I'm sorry.
Nibbandhan, the universe that we live in, and that we are in this minor in a sector, in a local. It's called, Nibbandhan is called a local universe because it is part of the greater. And the idea that Nibbandhan is a local universe is interesting because it tells us that the universe, which is the entire universe, with its expansive nature, is composed of universes, many universes of local nature. The universe of Nibbandhan is a young universe and has only recently become one in which its creator has become truly sovereign, a true leader of its self. Now, the astronomical observable universe of Nibbandhan is the Milky Way, but is more than the Milky Way. First of all, before the universe of Nibbandhan was the Creator Sun was, before the Creator Sun began universe building in terms of going to make life on planets and things like that. What happened was that you know the earlier part about Tesla and the gyroscopes?
Yes.
Well, the universe is really gyroscopic in much of what it is and its organization. And this is one of the things that's very interesting in terms of my basic question was, what is gravity? And this extra part, or this point that was, they don't call gravity, well, we call it gravity, but it has to do with globular clustering of what some would be calling particles. But actually it is an organizing or harmonizing of energy and matter through actual speaking to the chaotic and bringing it into order. One of the things is order brings about this wheel-like or gyroscopic-like structure, but it is also somewhat held together by energies which are not only based on chaotic. They tend to be, start to become aligned, and as a result, they start to take on this spiral nature, and out of that, more and more of the spiral nature. And finally, you know, we cannot dispute that, because when we look at many of the galaxies out there that have formed from more globular, nebula-like clusters that later actually turn into, again, more well-organized, you might say, galactic structures like our Milky Way. They tend to look spiral. And our solar system is another example of it. But is the Milky Way Nepheton? It is a part of Nepheton, which includes Milky Way, Aquan, Quinton, and several other darker areas, and including the primal architectural spheres that were needed in the universe creation. So these darker areas, which do not illuminate, were actually very close to the time of the nebular stage of the organization of Quinton and Aquan and the Milky Way and the primal three. And they also revolve quite about the organizational center or of this local universe of Nepheton. So the Nepheton universe is bigger, much bigger than the Milky Way galaxy. However, the Milky Way galaxy is much larger than a normal galaxy.
Michael, you talked about energies held together.
Yes.
Talk about gravity.
Yes. Well, let's look at one of the interesting points is that when we look at we look at it from an acoustic point of view, and then we take it to a music point of view. Then we realize that there's you know, seven octaves and all of this stuff of what sounds like proper notes on keys. These on keys are part of the structure, in a kind of a simple sense, of how the universe was built. So as we become on key, we feel this, you know, it's like we're listening to a really on key product. Someone who knows how to really sing on key and everything sounds beautiful. Same thing as we progress into this, we become more organized, and then we go through this kind of like off key and everything, like tuning, a tuning structure. We kind of like tune, and finally become on key. And this is pretty much how the universe seems like it operates in many of its ways and how it was built. So when it comes down to vibratory ideas, and Michio Kaku has really hit the nail on the head quite accurately by coming up with string theory and the 11-dimensional dimensions. And if you subtract the ones that we know well about, the four, we remain with the seven elements, the seven other elements that also make up the universe of Nepheton. So the universe of Nepheton is inclusive of what we see in terms of the three dimensions plus time, but also includes also seven dimensions higher. It's quite expansive. So when you look at see the Milky Way, there's more to it than that, a lot more to it. And one simple statement that was made was, to me, was when I said, "What do you need wings out here?" Because a big, huge V-wing craft was out there, and its wings had the proper design, I guess you might say, for aerodynamic flight through an atmosphere for lift. And the top edge was, the top side was longer than the bottom. The bottom was more flat, except it had holes in it. I said, "What do you, there's no, space is empty. You can't use wings. Why do you have wings?" The first thing they said was, "Space is not empty. And that's something I had to. I said, "You mean like gas so spread out?" He says, "No, it's not that at all."
So, what were the holes in the aerodynamic wing for?
They're like for a type of harvesting, or more of a harvesting device, projected in an acoustic. Like, well, there's a thought that it could be used for a driving mechanism of, but actually, it's type of a collection, harvesting, vortex type of place. So these are the grand harvester. These are the reapers, actually.
Reapers?
Yeah.
So the holes in the wings are not part of the aerodynamic design? They're more.
No,
for...
it's actually part of their purpose. So, but if you were to, drive a Mack truck in the wing, you could drive around for a while. It's huge.
Mm-hmm. You mean in the holes or the wings?
In the wings. And the holes were apparent, but they were something that I guess you could suck up a whole big truck in there if you wanted to, but I wasn't quite sure. I asked them if that was what they used to get the materials to build the New Jerusalem, and they said they have everything they need close by. And that was not what it was for. It was for mining. I use the term mining, like, strip mining or some kind of mining equipment, mm-hmm. space type mining equipment. But it said it's more like a harvester. So you might say it's a soul saving ship. I would say so.
But it's not a harvester for materials for building their
building craft or building their place.
Or
it
anything.
Wasn't that.
So, do they have to harvest materials at all, or are they just through crystals and, like, out of thin air, they make this material?
Well, yeah, they can attract it. Actually, much of the most common things are just being projected to space. That's why they said space is not empty, and it can be collected quite easily. When it's when they're using their directive technologies, it can happen naturally, but it takes a long, long time. Millions of years, or it could be directed and become a very short time collectively.
If millions of years are a long time, what length of time is a short time?
Days and
days. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not thousands of years.
Well, I suspect that a couple thousand years ago, the New Jerusalem was here, but was much smaller in nature, but also seemed to have been brand new. It is an architectural sphere, much like the one that was originally parked in the early stage of the formation of the Milky Way cluster, as we can see it. Yeah.
Okay. When you say the New Jerusalem was here in our solar system? Or?
Yeah, in our solar system.
So,
because of the fact that Michael of Nevadon was to become a mortal of his own realm or universe. On a selected world, which was way out in a corner, and as a result, there were no architectural spheres close by, so they actually had to make a special project, get one over here, and start to get it going and grow it, and it's been here ever since. And again, Jerusalem is the name of the capital of Satania, of all things, which is, Satan, for evil, the devil and all of that, which is the fact that this whole sector was a fallen area. Yeah. And basically a lot of mortal creatures, features of physical body, you can kill them. They have specific lifespans. Now we're living in this area.
Mm-hmm.
It's
Well, I have a question from Andrea. She says, my question for Michael has to do with paper 40 of the Aranchi book called The Ascending Sons of God. As Michael has said on many recordings, the thought adjuster is also called the Father Fragment because it comes from the Universal Father. Paper 40 gives some information not just about father-fused mortals like humans, but also sun-fused mortals and spirit-fused mortals. The Father, the Son, and the Spirit are the Holy Trinity. So basically, according to my interpretation of the Aranchi book, all or some intelligent life has a thought adjuster either coming from the first source, who is the Father, the second source, who is the Son, and the third source, who is the Holy Spirit. Michael mentioned on a previous recording that the Biavians, like Tan and Nella, do have a thought adjuster. If I'm understanding this information right, what kind of thought adjuster do they have? A father, a son, or a spirit fragment? Signed, Andrea.
One of the important things is that the father fractal, or the father fragment, is the father, pre-personal. In other words, much like how Kathleen was describing pressure, and you can resist or you can submit, you can flow, it doesn't seem to have a personality. But he, you know, when he moves the Holy Spirit circuit, the Father fractal, all of that is all somewhat pre-personal and does not really give us the ease of relationship. But what we have in the sun is this personality circuit that we can attain and easily move through. Many of the problems that we have in religion today are that circuit or the sun circuit being confused with politics or philosophy or the structure of tribal custom. But the reality of that personality of the sun circuit is quite real. We have three globular areas: the Milky Way, Quetta, and Aquan. These three share the three together. Yet, it's very important that they operate distinctly in shared roles and responsibilities, but are somewhat separated in circuitry. That's why there is a father-fused mortal, and there is a son-fused mortal, and there is a spirit-fused mortal. But what we have on Earth, because of the in-circuitry of the sun to become mortal on Earth, is we are unique. This is the part in which I was given special knowledge beyond the Urantia book. The Urantia book does talk about the general policies of the universe, the universe and the universes, and the universe of Nevadon, and even a lot about Urantia's place within it. But it does not give us things in detail, such as what was given to me in the understanding of sun-seized mortals, father-fused, sun-fused, spirit-fused, or the triunity being, having all three aspects of that, which I have been teaching all along, as a part of the fusion process. Therefore, becoming truly divine and a royal type of being, if we encircle and are able to encircle all three. Now, there are so many of who encircle one aspect or another, and I notice that in people's philosophies, their religious beliefs, and many things like that, that you can almost feel it where they're encircled if they are really on the divine path, past the animal. In other words, they're ascending. And when that happens, I notice that they can have the tendency of one or the other, whether it be the Father, the Son, or the Spirit. However, we can have, because of this unique relationship, with the encircled relation of the Father, fractal, the Son, Spirit, the Son's creator legacy here on earth, and the active encircling and actually embracing power of the Holy Spirit circuit creates us as triunitized beings of triune fusion potential. So this is a unique part. It is what I call basically the love affair with God. So this is a little bit beyond the Urantia book. And this is one thing that makes us quite interesting in the universe of Nevadon to look at. Because there are segments of the universe of Nevadon that are primarily functioning with non-fusion, with adjusters or father fragments which are non-fusible but having some relation more toward the personality circuit of sun. Others in which it is more equipped with the pressures and guidance of the Holy Spirit circuit. So they are another side. And that's why there was this triunity of space, of place, which includes the Milky Way. But all three kind of embrace all of those things. But what makes it all, has made us special, is that it all comes together here on little planet Earth here. And also makes it quite a confused place, because there is another element which has been, which remains in here, which is the element that says, don't believe any of it, it's a bunch of hogwash. Just remember, you only got this much to live, so just, this whole basic lie of the whole process of non-progressive life, and or the actual idea that it will go on no matter what, so you can create your own universe around or about yourself, apart from the three source, first, second, and third source.
So, Tan and Nella, they do, in fact, have a thought adjuster themselves?
Oh, yes. indeed that helps them project out they're part of a special program of that is allowed to certain celestials of a level of maturity to take another segment or another chance to help elevate or unconfuse the confusion. The 12 celestials that I did see and promised to help, they have been involved on the uplift of the planet even before the time of Christ. They have seen some of their activity confused by just, you know, many different causes. But it's all part of our, you know, development. But many things still remain embedded, which have helped keep us from going over the brink to destroy ourselves completely.
And the Celestials have helped in some ways the military has seen, and they'd send up some kind of rocket with a nuclear warhead and have pictures of a craft just going around it, sort of like giving a little bit of adjustments all the way around. And so yes, they have kept us from destroying ourselves, which is good. We do have protection because some people are crazy. And they do crazy things.
Well, that's more like, you know, roaring lion, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, we have a comment from Matt from Ohio. He said, "Hi, Curtis and Michael. Your program is my most favorite every week. Question to Michael. Dear Michael, could you please speak more about Riley's symbol device machine you've seen while on the mothership, and what places on or worlds did you look at during your first view with the pen and ink symbol machine?"
Well, okay, the pen and ink symbol, that's exactly what opened or turned it on. It was actually off, and I asked my guide that I wanted to go in there and, you know, work with it, see it. He went in there, my guide asked the operator to see if I could, you know, experience it. Well, of all things, the operator approved, and he went over to the side and picked up what appeared to be just a plain pen and ink drawing, and I said, and a paper of all things, and simply placed it over the screen, which is like a porthole, you know, like you look into. And it wasn't like putting on goggles or something, but similar, but not quite. And the machine came on and said, "Go ahead and look inside." And I just went in and looked at it. And at first, I expected all these colors and things to begin to evolve, but it wasn't quite that filled with color. Actually, Riley's symbols, when he colors them in, are filled with a lot more color than what I was looking at. It seemed to have been more monochromatic on the, forgot what you call it, but it's like that yellow or orange tinge of color spectrum, monochromatic somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it looking into it, it was initially seemed relatively simple. But as I looked closer, it was able to reveal more. And looked even closer, and I revealed more. Then I decided to look around, and where I looked at, they would zoom in, and I, so actually it was traversing or moving. It's sort of like switching channels, but not switching channels. Actually, what I was doing was just navigating within this virtual environment of planets, localities. So when Riley draws, you know, like localities, like he draws a pyramid or something, and it's really zooming in to this planet, and you can see this structure there. And you can zoom out and move into other areas, and then zoom in, and then you can see another area. So it's quite an active, interactive, much more interactive than our, you know, computers today. But in some ways, much like our video games, but actually not as filled with color. Not as filled with color. It was monochromatic. For me, it was anyway. Kind of orange-like, or yellow-orange. Amber, maybe amber, yeah.
And were there drawings involved with this machine?
What was that again?
Were there drawings? You said, you know, there's all this color, but was there any definition in, like, a pen drawing?
Oh, yeah, well,
it,
they were similar in the beginning. And it was almost like a map. I guess you might say it was a map.
Mm-hmm.
But three-dimensional. Space map. But it,
like,
I guess that's what it was. You know, it's like almost a navigational device.
A space map to where?
To wherever you wanted to go.
Oh.
you started off, well, oh. I guess when he waved that picture over it, the front, it
mm-hmm.
gave the domain. It gave you the base area.
Mm-hmm.
So much like what Riley's symbols would do, if you were probably wave one of those symbols over, it kind of locks in on, oh, we know where you want to go. So it says, oh, pyramids, well, that's Egypt, well, that's Earth, you know. Or, you know, and then boom, you're there, you're in that zone, and then you can navigate, you look inside of there, and you can look around, kind of sort of like, oh, where do you want to go? And it's interesting in terms of later when I navigated, or I, you know, basically flew back to Earth from Mars. Mars was, I never been to Mars, so the...
I never have either.
Yeah, well, that time, I had never been to Mars, so it wasn't imprinted in me, but the pilot took us there. But mm-hmm. Earth was imprinted in, like home. So he said, you can take the ship home. So I put my, I don't know what it was. It was simple, just put my hands down on something and go home. And it went dark, and next thing you know, it was there. But it was because it locked into this type of, almost like a feeling. So getting back anyway to this symbol machine, it seemed to have been pretty cool map. Much, very, very sophisticated map, very active and alive. But for me, it was very monochromatic. On the amber side. I was hoping for more color, but that's what I got.
When you said it had a window, was it almost like the glass of a copy machine?
No, I mean, it was sort of like it had a shaded viewpoint part where you look into it, and it, you weren't looking directly into the glass. It was surrounded by circular kind of a thing. I didn't press my face right into it. Like, you know, those radar scopes, where you, the old style radar scopes, where you could put your face right into the scope.
So you stood back a little bit.
Yeah, it didn't need to have that. Although it seemed like it because of the bezel or the, like that rim around it, it might have seemed like it was meant to look in like a old radar scope. Anyway, that's as much as I can remember, and actually is even more than I, you know, initially remembered.
Mm-hmm. Where was this machine located on New Jerusalem? Was it in amongst
it was part
a lot
of
other
the,
machines?
Scientific, what seemed to have been the scientific area, which I seem to have been involved with.
And I suppose there were many other things there that they didn't show you?
Oh, there was areas which was forbidden to go to.
Mm-hmm.
This is a forbidden area, and that was pretty much where I would say I could get lost. There's a huge area of dwelling, which had to do, which is, they simply said it was dwelling. You mean, I said people live there? And it was... It didn't, that term live there was a little confusing to them when I used that term. Dwell was something closer to, you know, maybe hotel room like, who knows, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of people that move in, and, you know, celestials that move in and through there and stay there only for a short time.
And why do you think that was off bounds?
Oh, the base reason was I would get lost, and they would have a hard time finding me.
Really? Like a child getting lost in a crowd?
Like what?
Like a child getting lost in a crowd?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. And were there other places that were forbidden to go into?
There was just, you know, like a gate, you know, don't go past that area. Just goes on and on and on and on and on. And basically, later I was taken out to the viewpoint where I could see the inside of the New Jerusalem, which was a grand and open space where I couldn't even see across the other side. And then I got an idea of how big that was. You know, the city of New York is nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can imagine, you take every one of the buildings in New York, line them up one side, line them up, pile them up, and stack them as, you know, basically a wall. It wouldn't even taste a little dot on that New Jerusalem.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I guess you could get lost there easily.
It's grand. Actually, it was like, it was more for the convenience of my guide. Mm-hmm. He would have to go dig me up. When I was told that just prior to, you know, being told to sit there and just watch. And when I got to that point where I was really confused already. Well, what is going on with this place? It's so huge. And there's so many aliens. And I was like, where are all the, I felt like the only human at one time. So when I grabbed one of the aliens by the hand and kind of screeched at me, and then he told me, oh, just sit back over there. And then, of course, a little while later comes the Dano, who meets me and says, you look confused. And I said, I am. And he says, well, you know, there's the more information, there's some on earth that can give you some information about what goes on here, the book. Well, anyway, there was the Urantia book. Yeah. And
wasn't
from then on, it was like going to be part of the class.
It seemed like the Urantia book was supposed to be still kept a secret from you.
It wasn't supposed to be brought back as part of their tool, because what happens with most books, mm-hmm. like Bibles and holy books and stuff, mm-hmm. they become really sacred and reserved, and you know, people start to just quote from them as if they are, you know, like totally infallible, or that's it. There's no more to it than that. And this is the danger of the Urantia book coming and saying that it was, you know, directed by the Celestials. The Celestials have a lot more. It says only a part. It says there explains some of what is going on here. You know, that's basically, you know, you look confused. And say, yeah, I don't know what's going on here. Oh, well, there is a book on Earth that will help you explain what's going on here. Some of what it is. Say, oh, you mean the Bible? And he kind of went, yes, but that's not the book. It was like almost frustrating because the Bible really has caused, you know, you look at what the Bible has done is like held back some of our development because, you know, the whole universe revolves around the Earth and all that concept, you know, misinterpretations of the Bible, you know. But so the Urantia book, you know, helps explain some of the things going on there. Some of the things he said. And that's about, you know, he didn't put it in the same category as the Bible, too. In fact, in a way, he felt it was more superior to the Bible in up-to-date knowledge, but not in the same way, because much of what the Bible holds has to do with telepathic or channeled information from the prophets. The prophets themselves received much of the information from celestials telepathically, and also colored their interpretations of the knowledge, much in the same way that happens to me too, because I only have a limit on what I can express mm-hmm. in words. And that's also the case of the Urantia book. The Urantia book has a lot that needs to be experienced but cannot. So the advantage for me is that I was in the New Jerusalem experiencing so many of these things with celestials, other material beings, and of many different levels, and many who are not material, who are Urantia, who others who are beings of light, true spirits, of high order and early celestial origin. Yeah. So.
Did the Celestials think the Bible was a holy book, and did they also think the Urantia book could be viewed as a holy book?
No, they don't look at books like that as holy books because they are truly instructed and living and alive with a, you might say, a fully engaged knowledge of universe government. Governance, universe government.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, amazing again.
Yeah, you see so many limitations that are created because of those books, which were meant to give us a taste and a break in and education into universe governance and how we need to, you know, become citizens of the universe, but people kill each other because of them, you know, they're totally wrong actions come out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, back to crazy things again.
Yeah, back to crazy. This is the heartache which I saw in the 12 after I gave my don't blame me for the troubles of human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah,
it goes back further.
It's like, don't we know it so well? I mean, yeah.
Oh.
And then it was almost like, oh, I wish we could. It was like I knew they wanted my help, but I just had to freely give it to them.
Well, we thank you, Michael, for your help, and the Celestials thank you also. And time to say aloha.
Aloha.
Okay, talk to you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.